This is The Topic is Trek, episode 17 for Friday, April 6th, 2018. Trill Crazy After All These Years. Welcome to The Topic is Trek, the podcast that runs on impulse power. Join us for a journey where no show has gone before. If it has to do with Star Trek, there's a good chance we'll talk about it. Sooner or later, because on this show, the topic is Trek. Engage already! Well, hello, everyone. We've been gone for ages, and by ages, I mean a month. I'm Clinton Alvord, one of your Topic is Trek hosts, and beaming in to join me, as always, are Mr. Craig Stepp.
Hello.
Hello, hello, hello. And Mr. Chuck Tomasi.
I love my job.
Push that button over there.
More feeling.
Tantalus Colony rocks.
It's a chair for you, sir.
I'm on the cheerleading squad.
Well, how has everyone been over the past month? Anything exciting going on?
Oh, it's been wonderful.
I've just been counting the star days till we got back here.
The star dates are counting down towards the cruise.
That's right.
Yes. And I keep checking the site, and it's getting more and more sold out. So if you're hoping to join us, we get no commission if you decide to go on the Trek cruise, you understand? That'd be nice if we did.
Maybe when we're on the cruise, we can figure out a way to strike a deal so we can promote the next cruise and get some money.
Yeah, that's it.
But $25.
If you'd like to join us, that would be nice. You could see us in person and say hello.
Yes, we're not on the celebrity agenda. Make no mistake about that.
Yeah, that's right. You'll find us at the buffet or, you know, something like that.
Hey, our Patreon account does take platinum.
We have a Patreon account? No one told me this.
Not yet.
Little steps at a time. Well, let's get right into it. And we're going to head right out and open up subspace chatter.
You don't need all that subspace chatter.
Why, it's perfect.
I couldn't resist watching Charlie X say that. I went, must have that audio clip. It's so good, I have to play it again.
You don't need all that subspace chatter.
But Charlie, we do. We need it all.
I want to stay.
Please don't wish us into the cornfield. Oh, that's completely different. All right, we're going to kick things off with a story, a happy story, and Chuck is going to tell us about it.
Oh, I get a happy story?
Yes, a happy story.
Good news, everyone. Star Trek actor and director was wed on my birthday. That's what it says. The son of Leonard Nimoy has wed actress Terry Farrell on what would have been his dad's 87th birthday. The son of the actor, famous for playing Mr. Spock, also had a role in Star Trek as he directed episodes of The Next Generation. Farrell, who starred, of course, in Deep Space. Craig, our picture with Terry Farrell. It's just, I feel so dirty now.
Dirty? We didn't do anything.
You're not thinking of the picture I'm talking about.
Okay, I'm getting Adam on the phone right now. Hold on.
Then again, we could say we're just, you know, one degree of separation away. Anyway, Farrell, who starred in Deep Space Nine, of course, with the science fiction saga, announced her engagement to Adam Nimoy last year. The pair first went public as a couple at Star Trek convention last year. The couple, who married at San Francisco City Hall, shared their wedding selfie with the film critic Scott Mance, who posted it on Twitter. And he writes, breaking news, Adam Nimoy and Terry Farrell got married today in a civil ceremony at City Hall in San Francisco.
All the ships at sea knew about this, apparently.
Farrell, age 54, and Nimoy, 61, received congratulations from stars of Star Trek franchise, including Jerry Ryan, who played, of course, 7 of 9 on Voyager. She says, congrats, lady. I wish you both a lifetime of love. They also received one from Robert Picardo, said, "You make a radiant couple." I tried doing that my best, Robert Picardo.
Aww. You know, yeah, it is funny because, you know, like Chuck was saying, his birthday is on that same day. And I sometimes when people have birthdays on Facebook, I go and look for a picture that's relevant to them and I'll post it. And I was like, oh, there's the one with Terry Farrell. And he goes, too bad she's married now. I replied and said, Worf's going to be mad.
That's right.
Hey, is she remarried then? I don't know.
Hey, let's say, wait, I'm getting Michael Dorn on the phone. Hold on.
I started to say, did her and Worf ever get divorced? But I think that kind of happened. So we're in Norrell.
Yeah.
By death.
Death kind of does, yeah, kind of makes that happen.
Yeah.
Once you go Klingon, you never go back.
You know, now that they're married, you might want to get them some kind of appropriate wedding gift. And a way to find something like that is a story that Craig is going to tell us about.
Wow. He's getting good at the segues. So
it's Dan still Curry, early.
Yeah. So Dan Curry's personal collection of Star Trek props, sketches, and more is up for auction. And there's some pretty interesting things in here. So on TrekMovie.com, last month we reported that the original art from Star Trek, the 50 Artists 50 Years collection, was going up for auction as part of the Heritage Entertainment and Music Memorabilia Signature Auction taking place in Dallas, Texas on April 15th. But it was also but that isn't the extent of the Star Trek portion of that auction. Also going up on the block is 37 lots from the personal collection of visual effects producer and supervisor Dan Curry. Curry held a number of visual effects positions in Trek franchise over 18 years, winning several Emmy Awards for his work on four series. He says, "It took me 18 years to accumulate the memorabilia that's up for auction. I was part of the small number of people who made up the 18-year club, people who worked on Next Gen, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, and Enterprise. I never really thought about assembling a collection for sale. They were just things that, for whatever reason or another, wound up in my possession, and I just kept them because I thought they were cool."
He swiped them. That's a nice way of saying I took things home from work.
Pretty much.
So some of the things.
Huh? Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
Some of the things that he's got is the Sword of Kaelas, which I'm sure Worf would love to purchase.
Isn't that a holy relic? You can't have
it
that.
It is. It belongs in a museum.
Yeah. Tell Indiana Jones.
Hold on. Let me get Kronos on the phone right now. Hold on.
the Distant Origin, the Voyager screen use creature model. And that's pretty cool. Let's see what. Oh, this is also, these look like the little bugs that they put in Chekhov's ear down below. There's a little. Right.
But they're from that episode where the guy's head exploded. Conspiracy.
Oh, that's right. Right. So also is the saucer section from All Good Things, the Enterprise saucer section, which is pretty neat. And the Klingon anatomy chart every doctor should need.
Two spines, that's all you need to know.
You know, it'd be funny if you walked into a doctor's office.
Or something else, but
what if you walked into a doctor's office and this was hanging on the wall?
and you walk in and he's singing, the Huchmuck connected to the Bluchva.
Sir, I'm sorry to say that your ridges are completely gone. I don't know what happened to them.
Like Zoidberg. I'll cut them a new cloaca.
Anyway, so those are pretty cool. There's the Borg Unicomplex from Voyager and another concept art. I guess that was this. Was that? Oh, yeah.
This was the
Zindi. Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah, if you we'll have a link to this article as well as all the other stories we're talking about over at the show notes for episode 17 over at The Topic is Trek.
Ding.
.com. I got it. It's still early in the episode. We'll get that down.
All right, I need one hand on the trackpad at all times.
Another way on the wheel.
There's a link to the actual auction within the article. And if you click through there, you can see all the stuff I'm not sure if everything that's, you know, how many of these things are from Dan's collection. One of the things that was in there probably was not from his collection, but it's the Squire of Gothos's actual costume.
Oh, I thought it was going to be
Trelane's costume.
Trelane's
mirror. No, they used that in Harry Potter, I think, afterwards. But anyway, so you can check out all the stuff that's up for auction. I believe you can actually bid. I think there's an online portion of that. But so if you want to spend...
Yeah, there's a buttons all over the place that bid now.
Yeah. So if you want to spend the... I think the opening bid is $3,000 for the Sword of Kaelas. So if you want to have that...
Starting bid. I don't think it's going to stay there long. Starting
is four.
Yeah.
And I think it said in the article, I thought it said eight.
So it, well, it's going to go, I think, for a lot.
Estimated price. Yeah. Estimated price. Yeah. Still. Hey, Kim, guess what? I just bid on the Sword of Kaelas.
We don't have a house anymore, but.
But I got a sword. Yeah. I got a batleth, and that's all.
They won't
let
me take it on the trek cruise.
No, they won't. They absolutely won't.
You can try.
But you know what you could possibly take that's Trek-related and hopefully would come about is if Star Trek Discovery wins a Hugo Award. That's right. Star Trek Discovery has an episode up for a Hugo.
He's getting better. I will admit he's getting better.
I'm working on it. I'm working on it all the time. For those of you who don't know, the Hugos are presented by the World Science Fiction Convention every year. And this year... the Star Trek Discovery episode, Magic to Make the Sanest Man Go Mad, which we know is the Harry Mudd time loop episode.
Loved it.
Is up for Best Dramatic Presentation Short Form. It's up against some pretty heavy competition, though. They include, ironically, the Black Mirror USS Callister episode.
Okay.
The Doctor Who Christmas special, Twice Upon a Time. And two The Good Place episodes. Michael's Gambit, which is the season one finale, and from season two of The Good Place, The Trolley Problem. So really stiff competition this year. I don't know who's going to win this one, but we will find out as when the Hugos are presented at WorldCon 76 in San Jose on August 19th.
That's so far away.
I know.
Actually, there's some good stuff in there. I watched some of The Good Place, which is kind of an interesting show.
Oh, it's an awesome show. Yeah, we watch it all the time. Awesome.
Yeah, I started watching it, and I'm not caught up or anything, but I'm enjoying it. But the USS Callister, I thought was pretty good, but I don't think that compares, in my mind, I don't think that's 100% compares to the Mud one. I think I like the Mud one better.
Yeah, I felt like the execution on the Callister one was good, but the story felt a bit one tone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And
so I think that it was played well.
Oh yeah. I certainly enjoyed it.
But it was, but I'm not sure if it had the depth. It kind of had the twist is early and you kind of just roll with that for as long as possible, I suppose.
Visually, I'll say one thing. Visually.
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say visually, they kind of, right at the beginning when they were shooting the, you know, inside the ship and you're not sure what's going on, they really nailed the visual because it looked like the 60s Star Trek a little bit. You know, they turned their heads and the profile faces and...
the lead across the eyes.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah, that kind of thing. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt your joke.
No, that's all right. The it, like some of the shows, I love Black Mirror, but some of them could be about 15 minutes shorter.
Yeah.
They take a while to get their wheels under them.
But you're like, 50, okay,
I'm going to endure.
15.
I'm going to endure because shorter. I know each episode is worth it, but it's that first 15, 20 minutes of the show. Like, oh, come on, get on with it. Where are we going with this?
There's a lot of setup.
Yeah.
And to find out where we're going with Discovery, we get to find out a little bit about what's going to happen with the season premiere.
Here's your proof that the show isn't scripted, people.
Yeah.
As if it was needed.
Star Trek Discovery executive producer Alex Kurtzman will take the helm for the sci-fi drama's second season premiere. Woohoo! Kurtzman is set to direct the debut episode of the new season, which is slated to begin production in April in Toronto. No air date has yet been scheduled for the premiere. So if you get yourself up to Toronto, maybe you can be spotted doing a photobomb in the back. Never mind.
I'll get Toronto on the phone. Hold on.
Season two will pick up where season one finale left off after bringing the Federation Klingon War to a nonviolent conclusion. The crew of the USS Discovery sets off for Earth, from Earth to Vulcan, but...
Spoiler alert.
Stops along the way to answer a distress call from the USS Enterprise.
Hello?
Wait, where is it? The finale's closing shot sets up a likely meeting between the Discovery's Commander Michael Burnham and Captain Christopher Pike, who commanded the Enterprise prior to the tenure of James T. Kirk. Speaking to Variety in February after the finale aired, Kurtzman said that season two would address fan questions about the relationship between Burnham and the original Star Trek series' Spock, who were raised together, according to the backstory revealed in Discovery Season 1. Quote, I think with Enterprise's arrival in the finale, we recognize that the audience has a lot of about the synchronicity with the original series, which really means, or synchronicity with canon, Kurtzman said. So the promise of the Enterprise holds the answers to a lot of the questions, including Spock's relationship with his half-sister, who he never mentioned. Which
also never mentioned his brother. So. Yeah,
how many others?
That's true.
He mentioned his pet before his family.
That's true.
Hey, you know what's funny is even in the movie when he mentioned his brother, he didn't even mention his sister then.
I love you, Aichaya. Which does not necessarily mean you're going to see Spock, just that we owe an answer to the question.
Wait, does that mean we're not going to see Spock? He's saying that right out there. Not necessarily going to see Spock, I'm just saying.
Spoiler. Yeah.
You can read more about that if you go through our show notes on the website. The topic is Trek.com.
He's waiting for the bell himself.
No, he wasn't sure where to put the pause.
I'm going to say his finger's on it.
Well, how about a tiny little bit more about the next season of Star Trek Discovery, Craig?
I'm all for that.
Yeah. So Star Trek icon Jonathan Frakes will return to Star Trek Discovery for a second season. I'm very happy to hear that because I think he did a great job on the last time he was there.
Yes, indeed.
Frakes was a guest star at Lexington Comics and Toy Convention, and during the panel, he revealed that he'd be heading back to Toronto to work on Star Trek Discovery Season 2. Yes, I'm going back. That's my Canadian accent of Frakes.
You sound
amazing.
Just,
it's just like we're there.
Just like Shatner.
Yeah. He went on to say, I just read the first script in the second season, and the outline was, or the second script is on fire now.
Well, I think you should put that out because if they won't have anything to film.
What are you going
to
work off of?
Crap. Now we're going to have to ad lib it.
Yeah. Frank seeing the script for the first season two does not mean he will be directing the premiere. That job is already gone to Alex Kurtzman, we just talked about. Perhaps the outline for the second script is for him. Nothing is for sure at this point. Frakes directed the first episode of Star Trek Discovery Season 1, second chapter, Despite Yourself, which introduced Discovery's cast to the Mirror Universe. Frakes played Commander Will Riker. What?
Yeah, you didn't know that? Surprise! Spoiler alert. Nice.
So I've been over 30 years, but what the heck?
Yeah. Next Generation, who is also where Frakes also began to start, is directing a Star Trek. He has since gone on to direct episodes of Deep Space Nine and Voyager and now Discovery. Didn't he do a...
He did one of the movies.
Did he direct any Enterprise? Maybe not.
I don't think so.
It wasn't Insurrection. Also, He did
First Contact.
Did he do First Contact? I thought he did the Mental Block. What was the one after Insurrection? Where they got married.
Nemesis?
Nemesis. No. Didn't you do Nemesis?
Okay. No. I try to block Nemesis out of my mind. So
yes, Jonathan Frakes did direct First Contact.
Okay. We'll go with that.
Nailed it.
Thank you, Google.
Point for you. Good thing that wasn't on HQ tonight. I would have lost.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm looking forward to that. Like I said, I enjoyed Despite Yourself. I thought it was a good episode, and everybody seemed to enjoy all the everybody talking about Frakes directing it on the after track or the after track. Everybody seemed to enjoy him being there, so it's good.
And I don't know what the directing process is about how much backstory you get, but it seems to me an episode director doesn't really get necessarily a lot of background. So the fact that he's seen this first script and he's seen an outline for the second, I've got to think he's working on one of those first couple of episodes. Cause you know, a director for hire is not going to see every single script for the season.
True. No, but I imagine in a serialized series like this, he's got to at least know what's going on before
and
what's coming up after.
Yeah. It's interesting. Yeah. I was reading ahead a little bit. It says he was talking about Seth MacFarlane. He says Seth MacFarlane clearly wanted the Orville to look like the Next Generation. So he hired the cinematographer, Marvin Rush, and the camera operator, and Brandon Braga, who wrote First Contact, among other things that are fabulous. Robbie Duncan McNeil, one of our wonderful directors from Voyager. James Conway, who directed a bunch of the Next Gen episodes. He hired me. He filled the room with Next Gen people. So, wait a minute. Wasn't Robert Duncan McNeil on Voyager?
He was on Voyager.
Yeah. Anyway.
Tom Paris.
Let's see.
I thought it was Doogie Howser. Oh, that's Neil Patrick Harris. Never mind.
It's these three name people I can't keep track of.
Harris, whatever. I guess that's kind of the appeal I like about Orville, and is because it's very TNG-like. In ways. It's got a feel to it.
So speaking about various things like the writer's room, the writer for Star Trek Beyond, or at least a co-writer, Simon Pegg.
Speaking of hiring trick people.
Yes.
Speaking of Star Trek things.
There's a thread here.
I'm trying the best. Like, I'm giving it all she's got. I don't know what that. So wow. Simon Pegg was really angry at Star Trek Beyond trailer for spoiling key scene. Mm-hmm. So in this article, apparently Simon was speaking with Geek Exchange, and he was talking about the fact that the film did poorly at the box office and his thoughts on that. He says, if you look at a film like Suicide Squad that was around for such a long time before it finally came out and people were so aware of it, whereas with Star Trek Beyond, it was left too late before they started their marketing push, Simon shared. It still did great business, but it was disappointing compared to Star Trek Into Darkness. And I recall that definitely being true, that we were not that far out from the premiere of Star Trek Beyond. We'd seen like a little teaser trailer, and it's like, nothing was coming out about it. Like, they thought it was just going to go in momentum.
Well, the other thing was, we're talking the 50th anniversary of Star Trek.
Right.
And it was all, it was like, okay, what are they going to do? They're going to pull out all the stops this year. And not quite.
He goes on to say the article says, some fans of the franchise have said that the film's first trailer, which was set to the Beastie Boys Sabotage and focused primarily on the movie's action sequences instead of its character or levity, turn them off to the idea of watching it. I think we all remember just the shot of Kirk flying off with the motorcycle. Mm-hmm. According to Pegg, the trailer actually spoiled the movie's major climactic scene. I was really angry about that, he said. The trailer used Sabotage, which was our surprise moment in the end. It was supposed to be a very fun and heightened twist and something that was a big surprise, and they blew it in the first trailer, which really annoyed me. Pegg also lamented the fact that the promos made the film look like a bonehead action film.
Doesn't the director have any sway in the promos or the trailers?
A lot of times, no. I think that that's just handed over to the marketing department. It depends on what the director's clout is, probably, about some of the say that they have in it. But usually you're just farming that off to somebody else to take care of. And, oh, they know what to do. And
I work in marketing. I don't have free license over anything.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's so much that they could have just teased from that movie without any of that. And I think I would have appreciated it more hearing that song without seeing it in the trailer and go, oh, that's funny. Just like he was talking about, rather than going, okay, here it comes.
And and clearly you could have had stuff like that, because I remember the one thing in that entire trailer that people latched onto was McCoy and Spock in the ravine.
Mm-hmm.
When he says, oh, well, at least I won't die alone. And then Spock beams out and he goes, well, that's typical.
I love that.
You know, it's like more of that, please, you know, rather than, you know, showing just the fighting and the explosions and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. That was so classic. I love that part. Sorry. Had a moment.
Well, we're going to stay speaking about Simon Pegg for a few minutes, because he's got a little something to clarify as well. Isn't that right, Chuck?
That's right. Over at TrekMovie.com, Simon Pegg clarifies he's not writing the third Star Trek IV script. And I'm getting lost in the numbers here.
Yeah.
This is from today as we read this. Earlier today, we reported some recent comments from Simon Pegg about Star Trek Beyond. But the actor and writer has some more to say about the next Star Trek film as well, including clarifying his potential role. In an extended interview with the Happy, Sad, Confused podcast.
It's not ours, huh?
No, oh, okay. Although it sounds an awful lot like something we could write. The Think We're Funny But We're Not podcast. The subject of possible Quentin Tarantino Trek film came up, and Pegg opined on that and revealed that, contrary to what was recently been reported, he doesn't have a competing script in the mix. Pegg knows about two scripts. Neither of them are his. In recent weeks, the big news about the next Star Trek movie has been around the idea that there are multiple scripts in consideration. I think we even heard Zachary Quinto say something about that. Do we have that story up later?
This story replaces that one, because it talked about this, about Simon's script being one of these scripts.
We talked about that before the show, Chuck.
And there's much more detail in this article. I was doing a sound check. You guys are
great. Read on, sir.
Much of the focus of attention has been on the one being written by Mark L. Smith, based on the idea pitched by Quentin Tarantino. In addition, there is one being written by J.D. Payne and Patrick McKay, announced in July 2016, which would involve Chris Hemsworth reprising his 2009 Star Trek role as George Kirk and Thor. Then last week, Zachary Quinto suggested that there is a third script being written by the Star Trek Beyond team of Simon Pegg and Doug Jung. The Warp subsequently reported a source told them three Star Trek IV scripts are indeed in development. However, if a third script is actually in development, it wasn't being written by Simon Pegg, who now tells Happy, Sad, Confused that while he and Jung are working on a project with J.J. Abrams' Bad Robot, it isn't for Star Trek.
Dun, dun, dun.
Star Wars.
Alrighty. So,
we'll
figure it out.
This is interesting, because I recall very early on after Star Trek Beyond premiered, there was a picture of Doug and Simon at desk. Apparently they were typing. I forget whether they were at typewriters or whether they were at laptops or whatever it was. And so I can't recall if it was like a stage shot or an
2017.
Actual,
you should be able to recognize the difference by now.
Well, it was a while ago.
That's okay.
And I think the speculation at that point, I don't think they said anything. I think the speculation at that point was, because they had written Star Trek Beyond, that they were working on another Star Trek script. And I don't know whether this thing that they're working on now for JJ is that same thing there, whether they were going to work on a Star Trek one and bailed on it. I don't know, but I think it's been a common belief by people that they did have a script in this mix. So the fact that Zachary thought that, I think, is understandable, because I think a lot of us were under that same impression that they had a script in this mix.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting to find out that they do not.
Well, it's nice to finally clear the air and understand, you know, what's on the table right now. I mean, this could all switch again.
I just hope that they have, out of these three scripts, one of them's really good.
Yes. Well, let's hope so. But you know what's always really good? Going to see Star Trek memorabilia. But that was almost a problem. But there's been a solution, hasn't there, Craig?
Why? I think so.
Click the next link, buddy.
I'm right here, actually. The Star Trek exhibition on the promenade drew... I'm sorry, let me back up. A popular Blackpool attraction that was threatened with closure can live long and prosper after being saved by a sci-fi superfan in a £150,000 deal. Sounds heavy.
Yeah, man. Is that word heavy again?
Yeah.
Is there something wrong with Earth's gravitational pull in the future?
Wait. The topic is Trek. Hold on.
That's right. Yeah. So, don't we have a zinger for that?
Sure.
Yeah. The
Star Trek. You are in
error. Right. The Star Trek exhibition on the promenade drew in 100,000 visitors last year, but was plunged in uncertainty after its parent company, Kuma Exhibitions, and all these names mean nothing to me.
Kuma, he was the lead Klingon on the early Discovery show, right?
Kuma. Yeah. It all went into liquidation in November, but now it is under new ownership and is set to expand next month. So the attraction was saved by lifelong Star Trek fan Martin Netter, who owns the largest collection of Star Trek memorabilia in the world.
How do you verify that?
You ask him, and he says...
Like a tape measure.
The article, I think, much further along, says he owns 50,000 pieces.
I mean, are 45,000 of them action figures?
Well, it's still collectible.
Okay. I've got 13,000 Picards.
Do you know how many molecules are in this one thing here?
I've got the Picard with hair. I got the Picard, the Borg Picard. And I got the...
I have the four lights.
Which has a fifth one, but there was a production issue.
I only got three.
Anyway, where were we?
I don't remember.
We lost them.
But anyway. We do have you can read about the whole thing, and we do have a link in the article to the Star Trek Blackpool, which you can go check it out and see all the things they got. Looks like they got a set. There's tours, the whole shebang. It actually looks really cool. So I would love to go see this.
Yeah.
Right. What I find interesting is that the guy, Mr. Netter, what's his first name? Martin, that, when you go to the, you guys still there?
Yep.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. All the audio seemed to drop for a second. When you go to the link that we provide, there are guided tours and he's giving them. So apparently he's now extremely involved with this exhibition, which is good. He also, I think he says someplace in the article, he says, I've got all this stuff, but if I don't share it with people, then it's useless to have it.
I agree.
And I think that's a great attitude to have. Share it with people.
Yep. It's like my comic book collection. I don't keep it to myself. I told Harrison he could read it. Just be careful with them. But, hey, you know, they're not doing anybody any favors sitting in a box.
And another thing that people would like to share is their knowledge of how to speak Klingon.
So you can go to the doctor's office.
Yes, that's right. And see the chart on the wall and go, hey, that's me.
I half want one of those charts now to go and put it on the wall in the doctor's office and leave it there.
All right, Chuck, I have a challenge for you. You ready? Are you ready for this challenge, Chuck?
Yes.
All right. So at work, you know, you can put in how many languages you speak. I think I challenge you to be the first one to say Klingon.
I usually go with the computer languages and say I speak JavaScript and I speak.
I'm telling you, I will try and beat you to be able to certify myself as speaking Klingon.
Because is what they're talking about is Duolingo has introduced a Klingon course.
Hooray. I mean, kapla.
Yes. So today is a good day to learn. Duolingo has officially launched its Klingon language course, meaning Star Trek fans everywhere can teach themselves how to speak with honor. The highly anticipated language course launched on Duolingo's website today. Well, that's a little while ago, of course, under a license agreement with CBS. First announced almost 3 years ago, the Klingon Duolingo course grew a wait list of over 170,000 people prior to its release.
Wow.
It's no surprise seeing how much the language's popularity has grown over the decades. The Klingon language was first created by Mark Okrand for the 1979 Star Trek movie and has since grown into one of the most commonly spoken constructed languages, rivaling Elvish and High Valyrian, which also has its own Duolingo course. So you can be fluent in that as well. Yes. Yeah. You can go back in Lord of the Rings and it'd be great. It's been translated into Shakespeare and the Judeo-Christian Bible. There's even a Klingon Christmas carol. Hundreds of thousands of people have learned basic Klingon over the years. But as of 2013, anyway, Okrand estimated that only about 100 could speak it fluently.
Hmm.
So this will up the game here. And so now, well, we don't need to have those subtitles for Star Trek Discovery anymore. We understand what they're saying.
Sure.
Because we took the Duolingo course and everyone will now know. No, I'm still going to be reading the subtitles.
I'm not kidding. I can't understand the thick northern accent. That's the problem.
I thought it was a marble mouth accent, but yes, I digress.
So that is an actual course that is available. However, we just got past April Fool's Day, and there were some things that were not so actual. Isn't that correct?
That is correct. Yesterday, well, as we don't record this, yes, if you time travel a little bit, was April Fool's Day, and it seems that the tradition persists in the Star Trek universe, or at least it does among companies that have procured the Star Trek license for merchandise. Several such licensors released amusing Star Trek-themed April Fool's Day gag products. The first of them ended up on the front page of an official Star Trek website. This reminds me of, Spotify went public, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the New York Stock Exchange hung the wrong flag out in front of their building. Spotify is from, they put out the Austrian flag, and Spotify is from, not Austria. I can't remember. That was nice. Anyway.
Yeah.
I thought they were going to like put out a Pandora flag or something.
No.
Yeah, that's what I was like.
No, they put the country flag out. Anyway, Star Trek Klingon alphabet Google fridge music. Magnets. Think Geek offered a set of Klingon alphabet fridge magnets. I didn't know Think Geek was an official licensor. That's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. They offered a set of Klingon alphabet fridge magnets, perfect for teaching children the basics of the Klingon language, which will help when you sign up for your Duolingo. Here is the product description offered by ThinkGeek. We're going to give you a little peek behind the curtain here at ThinkGeek, World Domination HQ. We occasionally receive a product that has an error on it. Nothing special there. These things happen in any retail production environment, right? See, the trick is that our errors tend to be the ones that we and you, our awesome customers, would notice. For instance, sometimes they mess up the Tengwar, or they accidentally screen print Arabesh backwards. Okay. Or they misspell the name of the Klingon homeworld. So it was only natural that we eventually came up with something like these Star Trek Klingon alphabet fridge magnets. They're an approachable teaching tool. Whether you're a Klingon toddler or an adult human ThinkGeek manufacturer based on KLIPLQAD.
I love that radio station.
These oversized colorful magnets shaped like letters from the Klingon alphabet make learning fun. Until you get your knife stabbed in your hand for getting the wrong letter. Oh, that didn't happen to me. They stick to any magnetic surface, whether that's your fridge or the ship's hull. I knew that was coming. And this set contains the entire alphabet with multiples for more frequently used, plus a few apostrophes. Only a few?
I was going to say you need one for every third word, so.
Why delay? Start learning Klingon today. You can see the product video above. We also have Eagle Moss Cloaked Klingon Bird of Prey, which I didn't. One of you two guys sent that.
I did. I thought it was hilarious when I saw it.
The reality is, I mean, the detail is exquisite. Now, Eagle Moss is actually a real model maker. I thought that was funny. Because if you listen to Larry Nemechek's The Trek Files, you will hear them as a frequent commercial injection.
Hey, what's funny is the little Twitter video, when you click it, the little display's turning. But
it rotates, yeah. So you can see a full 360 of the cloaked bird of prey. It's wonderful. We have the Star Trek Online Deb emote. We have, what else do we got? Nope, now we're down into Jonathan Frakes returning for season two.
No, that's not a joke.
No, that's real.
So yeah, good stuff. I'm partial to the bird of prey.
Yes. They didn't give a price on that one though, did they? Because I'm thinking that free would probably be the the way to go on that one.
And as many of our listeners already know, ThinkGeek often debuts some of these things on April Fools, and they come back as real products based on popularity. I don't think that's the bird of prey is coming back, but that could just be a hunch.
That's not theirs, but so the question is, do the fridge magnets?
Yeah, the fridge magnets. Why not?
Actually, I forgot to go see what all. Usually, they have four or five different products. I forgot to even go look and see what they offered on April Fool's this year.
I stay off the news feeds on April Fool's days. I've been fooled too many times in the past.
I did too. Actually, this year because it was Easter and April Fool's, I was like, I'm out. Forget it.
Well, speaking of fooling around, somebody tried to fool William Shatner, and it didn't work out so well for them.
You can't fool the Shat.
No. Tell us about it.
All right. So William Shatner responds to flat earthers using his image to promote their stupid ideas.
Hey, we might have some listeners out there. Just saying.
I'm quoting the title here.
Okay.
One-time Star Trek star William Shatner wants you to know that he does not support flat earth thinking. The British Flat Earth Association today tweeted an image depicting Shatner's face along with a quote, "I was fooled by science." Wait, I was fooled by science. The earth was flat. And the date was April 15th, 2017. That came with the text, "Great to have the support from another leading figure in society. The more we get voicing their views, the more credible our argument is for the wider public." Shatner responded, "The quote is a lie, and he does not support flat earthers." And he says, "Please remove this lie immediately. I do not support you nor this falsely attributed quote accurate
fake news."
Yeah.
And if you're in Malaysia, you can get punished for fake news now.
Really?
Yep.
Okay. The British. Nice.
Just make note. Don't move to Malaysia right now.
I know. I'm safe. Malaysia, South Carolina. That's a big difference.
It is.
So the British Flat Earth Society Twitter account represents a group that promotes exactly what you think. Flat Mars. I'm sorry.
Wait, what?
Dinnerware.
Flatware. The field of flat earth is, as the name suggests, we live on a flat earth as opposed to the more common globe model. You can't make this up.
No, you can't.
Somebody, I guess, but they do. Planet Earth is rotating, lumpy spheroid, approximately 4,000 miles in radius. Your iPhone relies on global orbiting GPS satellites to function. Okay. The tides, the weather, the sunsets, sunrises, eclipse, all of that stuff occurs because the Earth is round. There are places where you can even see the Earth's curvature. Yes, I have seen it myself. Some self-styled flat earthers, however, choose not to believe at this incredibly obvious fact, and instead twist math and science to debunk something humans have known for thousands of years. That was underlined. That's why I did that.
Oh, very good.
That's how you pronounce underline.
Underline is loud. Okay, got it.
Yeah.
And low and gravelly.
Their evidence is inconsistent, based mainly on misunderstandings, and generally no amount of demonstration or reasoning will change their minds. Their proposed model of flat Earth is incomparable with the most simple process you experience every day, you know, like gravity, having an atmosphere, blah, blah, blah.
And if Ben and Keith were here, they would recite one of their favorite lines, and they say, everybody knows the Earth is round, like a dinner plate.
Yes. Wait. While we ponder that, let's go from the ridiculous to the possibly, hopefully sublime. We've talked about this story before. Star Trek Discovery movies and Prime Universe could reunite after CBS Viacom merger.
Yeah.
The story comes to us from Newsweek, and clearly this article appears to have been written by a fan. This is from Newsweek, and I'm quoting, CBS Corp and Viacom are considering a merger which, as Trek Movie points out, could reunite the Star Trek movies and TV series, potentially teeing up a shared continuity between Star Trek Discovery and the in-development Star Trek IV, one of the miniscripts, the end of the Kelvin timeline, or Abramverse, and the ascendancy of the Prime Universe could be at hand thanks to shareholders' maneuverings rather than anything to do with Star Trek itself. Variety reports CBS and Viacom are in the final stages of deciding Viacom's value as prelude to a CBS acquisition. This would place CBS Corp CEO Les Moonves in charge of the combined entity, including Viacom holding Paramount Pictures. Currently, Star Trek exists in a strange limbo between the two companies. While CBS owns the Star Trek license, including the complete television library and merchandise, Paramount owns the movies and the right to make more movies. The split is largely a fiction, originally devised to pump up stock prices, since both companies are already controlled by National Amusements, making this just as much a reorganization under a single corporate umbrella as a merger of independent companies. Hmm. So, clearly, what this means for us is if these two entities come back together, we don't have to have these things under separate development. You can have the crossovers that you want to have between the movies and television. Right now, in theory, you could do that, but each of these companies clearly wants to maximize their part of the franchise, and they could see, well, you know, if I had Discovery stuff going over to the movies, that could lessen the amount of income that I'm getting from the television properties that I own and so forth. But when it becomes one company, we're back to the way it was in the old days.
Yeah.
When it was just under one umbrella and, you know, they would just flow back and forth between them. You would have Spock on Next Generation. You'd have a Next Generation movie with Kirk, and it just, you know, everything worked together as one unit.
Well, so, you know, Disney's got Marvel and, you know, ABC and stuff, and we have S.H.I.E.L.D., and they don't necessarily cross over. I mean, they reference each other.
A little, yeah. There's some references.
Yeah, there have been some crossovers. Some characters.
Nick Fury.
You know, this early on were on.
Schiff from Thor.
Right.
Schiff.
Yeah, I'm sorry. So, you know, there is some, and that's much easier to do. I mean, you don't have to have months of negotiation to have that happen when it's all under the same company.
Hey, Chris Evans. Yeah. Can you just pop over here for a couple hours?
Yeah. No problem.
But right? Don't get your hopes up too high.
You mean you want me to do my Fantastic Four thing again? No, no, not yeah. that. No, no, we're not. Yeah, we're not
actually,
no.
Can you work out for a few minutes before you get here?
You're off track.
Yes.
Because on this show, say it.
The topic is track.
Yeah. We're going to make a zinger for that.
All right. So
don't get your hopes up too high.
Yeah. That all sounds well and good that these things are going to merge, but Is there a little fly in the ointment? Let's find out as we hear an update on this story from Chuck.
Because Viacom has rejected the initial bid from CBS. But they will counter. According to CNBC and Hollywood Reporter, Viacom has rejected CBS's first purchase offer, as any good homeowner will tell you is probably a good idea. As previously reported, the two main issues are the valuation and the future role of Viacom CEO Bob Bakish. Viacom is expected to make a counterproposal, with Reuters reporting it may come on Thursday, which is tomorrow after we record this and a day before you've heard it. So you know more than we do at this point. While there's
and
no
always.
Yeah, that's nothing new. While there is no specific timetable, both corporations are reportedly interested in finalizing talks before quarterly earning reports in May. Tuesday evening update. As of about 24 hours ago, CBS makes an opening bid. According to multiple reports, CBS has made a formal offer to acquire Viacom at its valuation that is below Viacom's current market value. The deal stipulates that current CBS CEO Leslie Moonves, whom we just spoke of in the earlier article, would run the combined entity along with CBS COO and second-in-command. This is not clear where this would lead Viacom's current CEO, Bob Bakish. The Hollywood Reporter outlines in the next steps. Now it will be up to Viacom's special board committee to respond. One analyst immediately suggested it will push for a premium price and likely also urge the combined company to retain Bakish, given his turnaround efforts and the fact that controlling shareholder National Amusements has been happy with his work. All right. And then the original article is down below that says, here's what we're going to do. So we sort of read those in reverse chronological order from bid to rejection.
But I think hopefully the takeaway from this, if you will, is that, I mean, things are in process at the moment. Mm-hmm. We've got this bickering back and forth about, you know, valuations and so forth, and things can fall apart. But I'm not saying that they won't, but I think that the push really, especially given the way some of the other companies, including Disney, which we just mentioned, are really consolidating themselves, that I think that National Amusements really is pushing to have CBS and Viacom together as one unit. And so I'm hopeful that this will happen. And it sounds like by the time you're hearing this, there'll be more on this story.
Now, remind me, guys, National Amusements own Paramount? I'm trying to put the hierarchy together here.
I thought it said it owned both.
It owns both of them, but they're separate companies.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Okay. So they split it to increase stock value.
Gotcha. Well, I just knock some heads together and say work together.
That's exactly right.
No, right?
And up next, we have our last story of Subspace Chatter. And I'm going to turn things over for something a bit comical. You'll see what I did there in a second. I'll turn things over.
Yeah.
Not sure whether that was a good thing or a bad thing. To Craig.
Yeah, it's hard to understand those tribbles. So in the new Star Trek The Next Generation comic, a mirror universe double agent stalks the Enterprise.
Dun, dun, dun.
I think we did mention about the Star Trek comic. They were starting it back up, and there was a mirror issue coming up. I think this is all related to that. We mentioned it maybe an episode or two ago. After IDW recently gave The Next Generation its first popular stint in the beloved Mirror Universe, remember the one with the Borg-looking Data?
And the very buff Picard.
Yeah, yeah, he works out. He's been working out with Chris Evans.
Crossover.
Yeah. It's the newest Trek comic offers up a follow-up to that honestly kind of sounds like it's going to be by the way of Star Trek Discovery. Yeah, that's what the sentence says. Ahead of IDW's WonderCon panel today, IO9 can exclusively reveal Star Trek The Next Generation Terra Incognita, a new 6-part miniseries set in the TNG era from Scott Tipton, David Tipton, and Tony Chastain. Terra Incognita will tell the series of a standalone adventures with the crew of the Enterprise, just as if they were on their 6 episodes of the show itself, the original show with the original Enterprise D and everything. But there will be one through line, a Mirror Universe crewman from both Mirror Broken and the upcoming event series Through the Mirror has found his way into the Prime timeline and has disguised himself as a Prime counterpart in order to wreak havoc on the Enterprise.
Well, I see with the Star Trek Discovery type of plot is there.
Yeah, and I can see exactly who they're talking about because you can see him tied up there.
Yep.
You know who?
Yeah. It's his Broccoli? Nickname. I was going to say his nickname is a vegetable. Well, okay. I was going to hint.
They've got all Gulliver's Travels on him.
His initials are Broccoli.
Terra Incognita is when you don't want someone seeing your browser history.
I did not know that.
That's right. So IDW describes Terra Incognita as a series with a beginning a brand new wave of episodic miniseries. So maybe we can expect more from the Next Generation crew, but other beloved crews and eras from Star Trek's long history. More DS9 and Voyager comics, please. That would be cool. But for now, Picard and his friends. Sounds like a children's book.
Yeah, Picard and his friends.
Yeah. Beam down to Earth and they go to the garden. There's a happy Easter bunny.
Purple dinosaur.
Yeah. They're going to have to deal with a sneaky assailant in their midst. Check out the new variant covers for the issues below. And they're a pretty cool one. I kind of like the second one. There's one where you're sitting in 10 forward and I can't scroll. Riker and Troy are gazingly looking at each other. And then in the bottom one looks like almost like a movie poster view.
Really cool. And once again, links to all these articles are over at, for episode 17, over at The Topic is Trek.
I was scrolling.
And by the way, I'm curious to find out when these are supposed to come out. Doesn't mention that in the article. I'm going to go check. I'm going to have to take a look. I'll dive deeper.
Okay. And while that happens, we are going to come back from our subspace chatter and head out on our main mission. Well, not quite yet head out on our main mission, because before we do that, we'd like to introduce a new randomly occurring segment that we're going to call Mind Mole.
Randomly occurring? I've got stuff lined up for like the next year.
They're pretty random even when they occur normally.
This show is randomly occurring, apparently, to our schedule.
And you're see right. What we mean? Because here is our first Mind Mole.
I wonder if prune juice affects Worf the same way it affects me.
Think about that.
What was it? The dramatic gopher with the eyes?
Yes.
I didn't have that fish in the whole production thing, but just that one hit me. It's the dramatic tribble.
So
where's his eyes?
So look forward to more of our mind mulls as time goes by.
I swear they'll get better.
No, they won't. He's lying. Now it's time to head out on our main mission, where we take a Z minus 10,000 meter deep dive into one subject and try to stay on course. This time around, we're going to just.
Sorry, my elbow hit the button.
Excuse me, Ensign.
Great. The airlock opened and we lost half the crew. Wonderful.
Helmsman asleep at the wheel again.
This time around, we're going to discuss things that came out of the WonderCon panel. For those of you not familiar with it, WonderCon is an annual media convention that takes place in Anaheim, California. This year, there was a Star Trek Discovery panel with lots of behind-the-scenes people on the panel. And we've all had a chance to watch it, and we will have a link, I believe, to the art. Well, we don't have a link here, but we'll get a link in our show notes for the panel as well. It's an hour panel.
I failed my homework. I did not get to see this.
Okay.
I'll say this. I forgot I was watching it in 1.5 speed, and I was like, Mary Chifo really talks fast. I'm like, oh, wait. Why does she sound nervous?
Wow. So a couple of the things of interest that I found in the panel was they were talking about the use of 3D and 3D printing. And, you know, there are certain things you expect it to be for. What I didn't realize is that a lot of the prosthetics were actually printed with the 3D process as well. They did some sculpting of them after the fact and customizing each of the pieces. But I found that to be fascinating. Also, that when we talk about prosthetics and things, that we've now moved from the era of foam latex to silicone as the material that they use. And they talked about using clear. I guess that helps for better blending.
I think he said they were using silicone colored, colored silicone. So when they did the makeup on it, they could just weather it, you know, rather than having to paint it.
Okay.
I thought that's what he was saying. Is that not?
Well, I thought they talked about clear to have it blend in, but it could be both.
I disagree. Da, 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 da,
da, da. Fight!
Bring on the Lirpa.
But first, the Tranya.
Nothing beats a good drunk fight.
That's right. Just break one of those Syrian brandy bottles and just wave it around. Another interesting thing that I noticed in there was they were talking about special effect shots. And of course, we've got the special effect shots that are the spaceships and extending sets and all those type of things. But some of them were rather subtle, because apparently in the scene where Giorgio is beating up on Laurel in the brig,
yes,
the blood that's on her was digitally put on afterwards because they didn't want to do cleanup on the costumes every single take.
Ooh, interesting.
That makes sense. It's funny because I was just watching. I purchased Star Wars, The Last Jedi, and I was watching. You know that first scene. I just watched that video, this panel, and then I'm watching Finn fall off the table right at the beginning, and water or whatever starts shooting up, and I was like, I wonder how many times they had to clean that up for every take, which kind of goes back to what you're just saying here. You don't want to have to clean up all that stuff. All right, mop it up. Let's get it back on the table. Let's do it again.
And I was thinking, imagine if they use that same kind of technique during the Wrath of Khan era, that blood spot on Kirk's uniform wouldn't keep shifting around 12 different places.
Right. You can catch it in post.
That's right.
One shot is there and one shot is not. Hey, what?
And it's always the same. It's always in the same place.
Yeah.
They talked about some production things, the mycelial network in which Stamets walks. Is based on a real life plant called the Sticks of Fire, which I had no knowledge of. So I went and looked for images of that, and I'm going to include one of those in the show notes and said, oh yeah, I can see where that environment came from. There was a question from one of the people in the audience when they did Q&A talking about, were they going to have any same-sex female relationships? Like, you know, we've already had a male relationship. And one of the showrunners said, well, you might be watching one during the show already and you don't know it.
That's true. Yeah.
Interesting.
He said that the characters lead with the professionalism and competence and not their sexuality. So he says,
it's probably between some of the bridge crew we haven't even seen speak yet.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
those awkward sideways glances that everybody gives.
Side eye. And you know what? Yeah. I want to say one thing is that I hope that they're not just putting this in for the sake of diversity, but I want these, you know, same sex or whatever, I want that to be an organic part and
yes,
have a reason to be there rather than just, you know, be there.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, any relationship should be there for a purpose, you know, to make the story more interesting. You know, I mean, you know, even if you have, you know, a male-female relationship, it has to be there to accomplish something story-wise and makes, you know, help things along.
Yeah. So Stamets and Colbert, I got invested in that for a little while. I was like, I'm really into this, you know, that they're, and then, you know, the next thing I was like, what?
Wait a minute now. Really? Yeah, I suppose.
But whatever kind of relationships they do put together on the ship. I want, you know, I like that investment. That's what drew me into Discovery was the character building.
You're not invested in communication officer number two?
We'll talk about that off air.
And they're also talking about season two being more about more traditional Trek exploration and diplomacy type mm-hmm. of things rather than, you know, because they said, well, you know, now that we're in a kind of I don't know if they refer to it as the end of the Klingon War, but kind of the cooling down of the Klingon War, that they're going to move on to other things.
Yeah, because it's not the end of the war. We still had conflict in Kirk's timeline until the Organian Treaty.
It's more of a Cold War, really, at this point.
Okay.
Yeah, so, I think they were saying that they're getting more towards the traditional Star Trek, Star Trek situations rather than whole war thing.
Right. But the biggest thing that people were talking about that came out of this panel was a deleted scene from the finale of season one.
Oh.
Did you see that, Chuck? You didn't see that, Chuck?
Mm-mm.
Maybe we should pause right here and you can watch it real quick.
I was going to say, yeah.
No, we're already running long on the show.
Yeah, it's going to be a spoiler alert for you because what ended up happening was we see a scene where Giorgio, the Mirror Universe Giorgio, is still on Kronos and is running one of those seedy clubs.
He's actually running the club I think they were in.
Oh, okay. I know it was that kind of looking place. It was that exact same one.
I just assumed it was because it looked like it. That's right.
And
I'm sorry, go ahead.
So a figure comes in and starts chatting with her, and he looks like a Trill, but she says, you look like a Trill, but you don't talk like one or act like one. And it turns out that he's from Section 31. And he's recruiting Giorgio to be in Section 31.
Yeah, and gives her the black badge.
Right. So, of course...
Remember the black badges on the Discovery?
That we saw in one scene. In the third episode.
And the guy mentioned it. You know, he calls it out at the beginning. Well, that's Section 31 badge, I guess.
And, of course, everyone's first thought was, wait, if you're a secret organization...
What are you doing there?
Why do you have a badge that you wear?
He's proud of his job, damn it.
You keep it in your pocket.
Yeah. Hey, is that a... Black Delta Shield in your pocket?
Or maybe he's not part of the group, but the group wants you to think he's part of the group as a diversion.
Oh, my head hurts now.
Well, here's the problem that I have with that scene, and I'm trying to figure out when it takes place after Giorgio leaves Michael and everybody and goes off on her own.
Yeah.
She didn't just walk in there and, okay, I'm running this place. You know, the kind of brothel place that they're in. And I'm like, okay, so when does this take place? This must have been months after the end of Discovery because she would have time to purchase, take over or whatever and establish this place.
Right. And I think that was one of the reasons why it was a deleted scene. I mean, it's nice to have it. It's kind of like one of those... It harkens back to the webisodes, the mini webisodes you would have for shows. Cause hey, there's something, it's like something that tides you over, but it was clearly shot for the episode. But when you talked about, well, where would you place that in the episode? The only thing you could do with this is do a Marvel type post credits scene for this, right? Because it doesn't work with the flow to say, all right, so then all this time goes by, Giorgio's in charge of this thing, and then suddenly the Enterprise is heading to Vulcan to pick up a new captain. It has to be after that.
Yeah, a little subtitle comes up, 6 months later.
Exactly.
So I was curious about the timing. Where does it sit? And that's kind of what you're saying. Where does it sit after the events play out in Discovery? So,
right.
I have a feeling this scene would probably fit right at the beginning of season two.
Right. And we kind of had the feeling that when Giorgio left that area that that was not the last we were going to see of her.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this just confirms the fact that she's still around, that, you know, that she's being recruited to Section 31, and Section 31 is going to have play in season two as well. So we'll be seeing her for many episodes to come.
The other thing they didn't show was Laurel going off and running her flower shop.
Yeah, well, it's a nice place.
Yeah.
You'd like it.
She's doing all right.
All right. Well, we're running long.
At least we didn't see Sloan show up.
We're running long here, so we're going to come back from our main mission. But that still didn't prove the crew that went out the airlock back into the ship. And go to our very quick warp speed roundtable.
Well, they went out the airlock, but fortunately we beamed them right out of space. Oh, wait, that was...
Yeah, that can work in theory. So this time around, we're going to play a game of intrigue. So, gentlemen, I'm going to put this to you. I'm going to say, put on your black Delta shield and tell me what you think the coolest thing would be about being a member of Section 31. And I will start off, and I will say that I think the coolest thing is that you would get access to tech that Starfleet just wouldn't allow. And the first thing I thought of was a phaser that's also a transporter. You know, you can just like shoot that person and beam them right into the brig.
Yeah, that'd be convenient.
For a minute there, I thought you were going to go all Rudolph on us and say, a phaser that shoots jelly.
That's for a different section, I think.
We're from the island of misfit equipment.
That doesn't sound good at all, Craig. Stop, please. Yeah.
So, Chuck, to you, what would be the coolest thing about being a member of Section 31?
Oh, that's easy. I'd be working on getting Section 32 up and running.
The other secret organization.
It's the successor to, because, you know, if you're walking around Enterprise wearing your black Delta shield, obviously it's not that secret anymore. So you have to start a new one.
We'll just put an A after it. 31A. And Craig, what do you think would be the coolest thing about being a member of Section 31?
I think the coolest thing would be picking on Dr. Bashir.
Well, your wish came true in Deep Space Nine.
Hanging out with all the other cool kids in the Obsidian Order.
Yeah.
The Tal Shiar. We have this, annual Christmas party.
And the other cool thing is having the black Delta shields. Of course, that's...
Absolutely. Cool. Which you can buy now, as I think we've mentioned on the show before. You can buy those.
Some secret organization.
No. And he puts it on the counter. I mean, Chuck hasn't seen it. He puts it on the counter. It's a nice little presentation box that it's in. You know, it's very nicely done, very tasteful.
Section 31 is clip, Chuck, when we're done here.
Section 31 refrigerator magnets. You know, it's pretty much all lunch boxes. It's all over the place.
To-do lists, and it's just a list of people. And it just, yeah. Anyway. And
the coolest thing about Section 31, you get a free Duolingo account to learn Klingon. Oh, wait, they're all free. Oh,
never mind. All right. Well, it's time to end our show.
Already?
Oh. Yes.
Okay.
So time to hit the theme, boys.
You have to work core.
If you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend about it and subscribe so you never miss an episode. We'd love to hear from you. So follow us on Twitter at The Topic is Trek, visit our Facebook page, or visit thetopicistrek.com. From myself, Clinton, Craig, and Chuck, thank you for listening. And as we always say here on The Topic is Trek,
don't put on red shirt and the black Delta shield.
So majestic. I love that ending.
Space, it makes me cry.